Poroshenko shouldn't waste a good crisis. Get some legislation passed that'll make your country more friendly. Scott Simon, rather than asking what the Secretary of State, Secretary of Commerce Pritzker would say to people that said, "Well, what if Putin said something to his allies in the Ukraine? Take advantage of a good crisis." Didn't ask about that, and said, "Is there any way we can use commercial pressure against Turkey to get them to work their will?" He was invited to, in a way, because Pritzker was talking about commercial diplomacy. That's a quote, commercial diplomacy. Anyway, time to go. Opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. And it's time for the labor hour, and I think I'm queued up. Hang around, check it out. Union Edge coming up as well. The alternative radio is now on at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, if you might have noticed that it's not on Saturday afternoon anymore.
We're just not working anymore. Hello, folks. Welcome to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you in the air by listener-supported community radio station in WFT in Champaign, Illinois, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and webcasting live worldwide at WEFT.org. Views and opinions expressed here are those of speakers and do not necessarily represent those of station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some of our underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, call 217-328-2295. And the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour and the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio.
Okay, thank you, Bob. We're going to be having some callers calling in from Detroit, Michigan. There's a rank-and-file auto worker and a rank-and-file public school teacher who are running for U.S. Congress and the Dearborn School Board up there. And they're running on a party called the Fighting Workers Party. And, of course, we've been reporting about all the shock doctrine that's been happening in the state of Michigan and Detroit. In particular, they're going to be calling and discuss why they chose to, run as an independent political party as opposed to running as Democrats or Republicans. So that'll be they'll be calling in about half past the hour on that. So in the meantime, though, I want to say that next Saturday on the World Labor Hour, we're very honored. We're going to be having a full pack program. The first half hour of the program, we're going to be having Stephen Saleta.
Oh, great.
Yes, yeah. In the program. He was the academic that was hired by the University of Illinois, or actually signed a contract to hire him, and then withdrew the contract because of his personal opinions about the conflict in Israel-Palestine.
Which he expressed through social networking.
Which he expressed through social networking outside the workplace. So, yes, he's going to be on the first half hour of the show because this is a labor issue, but don't make no mistake about it.
It is definitely
a labor issue. Yeah. Yes. And second half, we're going to be having Brian Doliner and James Kilgore on from the No Jails Committee here in Champaign-Urbana talking about why there shouldn't be a new jail built here in Champaign County like they're the powers that be have been pushing for repeatedly over time, and why they think, though, instead that there's other facilities like mental health facility that needs to be built instead. So it's not like they're advocating for no building. They just want the building to be done for use of something that's more need as opposed to more jail space. And also there's going to be a social worker on who works for the public schools here in Champaign talking about her experience down in Ferguson along with Brian and James. So
excellent.
Yeah, tune in next. And we've got a lot of great programs coming up, a lot of great guests coming up here for the rest of the month of October and into November and actually going into December, which we'll update you on, of course, as time goes on here. So
Ann Feeney's coming up.
Indeed. Yeah. That's the, I believe,
November 8th.
November 8th, yes, indeed.
Part of the CU Folk and Roots Festival.
Yep. So she'll be live in the studio.
She's a labor rabble-rouser.
Yes, indeed. And hopefully, I'm sure, like in previous programs she's been on a couple of our programs in the past over the years. And well, at least I can think of at least two, so there's probably more.
Probably four.
Well, Bill says it's probably four, so this is probably...
This is going back to the 90s.
Yeah, this is going back to the mid-90s.
I met her before the show started.
Okay.
There you go.
Great. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. And anyway, so, Bob, do you have any particular news story or two that you think's interesting?
I'm going to combine them all into one story.
And this
is, about three of some of our favorite employers.
Okay. And, Walmart, and that, one of them?
Yes. And as you mentioned, the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers. So, Amazon's going to hire 80,000 holiday workers. It says an increase in customer demand is spurring Amazon to create 80,000 seasonal positions at its network distribution centers across the U.S. They say that's a 14% increase over the number of temporary workers it hired last year. This is from a Amazon vice president here, Mike Roth. He says, we're excited to be creating 80,000 seasonal jobs, thousands of which will lead to regular full-time roles with benefits starting on day one. It says the giant online retailer said it plans to convert more than 10,000 of its U.S. seasonal jobs into full-time positions. Seattle-based Amazon now has more than 50 U.S. warehouses, which the company calls fulfillment centers. And by the end of the year, it will have 15 sortation centers. What's the difference? It describes a sortation center in Washington State. It says, unlike a traditional fulfillment center where employees sort and prepare items for shipment, this warehouse is full of sealed packages that move along conveyor belts where workers and computers sort them and prepare to ship them to individual post offices. So they're hiring some workers with the intention of hopefully moving some to full-time employment. Although they're having these sortation centers, which sounds like they're going to be all computerized and they're not going to have employees working in them.
Well, I've read articles. I think there was one that was pretty big like about a year ago in the more progressive press, you might say, sort of a diary of working at one of these places.
And it the sounds Amazon like warehouses are
awful.
Notoriously terrible, yes. Yeah.
I heard Amazon's going to be actually opening a brick-and-mortar store, a real store in New York City.
And also,
but the warehouses, like you say, they're cold in the wintertime, they're not air-conditioned, and they're hot in the summertime, and they really make the workers work a strenuous schedule there.
But you see, here's the thing. You're talking about these sortation centers, and I've been – it's really weird. I've been working on a couple of construction jobs in recent years, such as the big FedEx expansion out north of town here, and where they basically doubled the size of their warehouse that's out there. But it's amazing. Hardly anybody works there.
Yeah. Really.
You have security people. Yep. You got, you know, a couple of janitors. They got a truck mechanic. There's a subcontract, sort of a company that has somebody there to change tires on the trucks. There's a
couple people to work on the conveyor belts and the.
Well, there's you know, a couple, you know, janitorial people like that. There's none of this where you have people like I believe like it is out at Super Value, which is a food place. Mm-hmm. There's no like going and picking stuff. It's all done. There's all kinds of conveyor belts all over the place. Most people, and you know, they got a few people that keep those things running.
Right.
And they have laser readers on them. And they
robot controlled forklifts and stuff like that.
Well, not even that. It's like all this stuff is just on conveyor belts.
So
pretty
it's
much
sorted by laser
and
reading of the barcode. Okay.
And it goes right to the place where the truck is going to be to pick it up, and then that driver loads it.
Wow.
You see, so there's not that many people that work out there. Also, too, remember, too, FedEx, their drivers are independent contractors. They had a law passed. Another one was there was a younger African-American man one day about the end of my work day, and he comes walking up, and he goes, is your company felony-friendly?
Huh.
And I said, well, yeah, I guess. And he goes, well, FedEx isn't. And I said, well, what you're going to have to go to – yeah, I said, we're actually pretty felony-friendly. Just go to the laborer's hall or the finisher's hall.
Didn't that used to be a requirement to get into laborers?
To be an executive, at least.
Yeah, you had to be a made man, you know, to get anywhere in the laborers. But so anyway, that's getting a little – but the big new craft expansion, that place, I don't know how many people Humco employed out there. It was probably at least 100 or so. And they were a union outfit. Now, they got torn down, and they built this giant new warehouse there using these new construction techniques that destroy a lot of our work, mm-hmm. like these prefabricated walls mm-hmm. and stuff. And we're using and it's going to be the same thing. There's not going to be many people working in that thing. And it's as big as about the whole rest of the plant.
Yeah. A current craft employee told me that's the place that's taking all our jobs away, that warehouse they're building over there. So,
That was the city of Champaign gave them a huge tax break.
Yep. Also here, we got Walmart looking to bump all workers' pay above the minimum wage. Yeah. The huge retailer's chief executive, Doug McMillon, said Wednesday that the company plans to end minimum wage pay for its workers in the future. It is our intention over time that we will be in a situation where we don't pay minimum wage at all, he said. So it says here the plan would put Walmart in league with Costco and Gap among employers committing to pay workers more than the minimum wage.
What, says, 10 cents?
Yeah, it doesn't say. As the largest private sector employer in the country, Walmart would have an outsized influence on the minimum wage debate. So it says here less than 6,000 of the retailer's 1.3 million U.S. employees currently make the prevailing minimum wage. And they claim that the average hourly Walmart worker is paid $11.83 an hour. So, but they say they're going to try to pay people more than the minimum wage. Here's a quote from Mitch McConnell. He says, if you engage in this kind of minimum wage increase right now, you're going to destroy between 500,000 and 1 million jobs, Mitch McConnell said in a debate in his reelection campaign.
Uh-huh.
And finally, here's another one of our favorite employers, Jimmy John's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy John's employee non-compete document is insanity. And this is actually...
What?
Yeah. This is actually something that was in Smile Politely this week. And, uh-huh. you know, I want to just mention Smile Politely has their radio show here on Friday evenings at 5:30. And they didn't report on this here last night. I don't think. I didn't catch the show. But this was in their online edition. And it says basically Huffington Post obtained a copy of Jimmy John's non-compete agreement, and all employees are required to sign this, no matter whether they sit on the corporate food chain or they're just an average employee. It says the agreement states that after leaving Jimmy John's for any reason, the employee cannot work for 2 years at any Jimmy John's competitor. That would be crazy enough, but it gets even more Banana Town is the quote they use here when you consider what Jimmy John's apparently considers a competitor. Any business that makes at least 10% of its revenues from sandwiches within 3 miles of any Jimmy John's.
Try enforcing it.
Yeah. Basically, any former Jimmy John's employee can't work at any restaurant that serves sandwiches or even any business that provides sandwiches as a side service. So it says 10% of their revenue within 3 miles of any Jimmy John's. You know? So a company spokeswoman refused comment because Jimmy John's doesn't give any semblance of, well, you should read that yourself because they use some language that we don't use here on the air. But check it out on Smile Politely. And evidently they have the confidentially non-compete agreement on the Huffington Post website. You can go check it out. And it does say in there exactly that you can't go work for any restaurant that makes more than 10% of its money selling sandwiches within 3 miles.
Try enforcing it, buddy. Try enforcing it. First of all, most of these people are working there, don't have anything to sue for. So go, you know, you can't get blood out of a turnip. Second of all, I'd love to see one of those cases come to court, especially locally here. Boy, that'd be fun to mobilize for.
Yeah.
That could be a real fun media circus, if you will.
Yeah.
As if the guy, I mean, he's got enough bad publicity out there. I mean, this could be a great opportunity to really, sock it to him again.
Yeah, yeah. So, interesting stuff there.
Yes.
They can't go to work for any Jimmy John's within any Jimmy John's for at least a year after you've worked for Jimmy John. And there's actually non-competitive things between the Jimmy John's
because they're all franchises.
Restaurants. Uh-huh. Yeah, to say that you can't hire away any employee or hire one for a year from another Jimmy John's. But amazingly, you can't work for any other restaurant that serves sandwiches within 3 miles of a Jimmy John's.
Who in the heck does this guy think he is?
For 2 years.
Well, yeah. There's also the recent story, I think it was between Apple and Microsoft, were for a time that they had sort of an agreement that they wouldn't hire each other's employees.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and that
I've heard of that happening. I've seen that in even well, I won't go into it, but there, yeah, I've even seen that locally, you know. In within the same company, different departments, even, you know, kind of so interesting.
Check out the story on Smile Politely, and okay. You know, and they'll link it over to Huffington Post that did some research, and you can actually read the non-compete agreement there on Huffington Post.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listen to Supported Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned. That was the band Rise Up, and the name of the song was James Connolly, who was he's known as an Irish nationalist, which really is a misnomer. He was he was quite an interesting person. He lived in the United States for quite a while, but he was basically a labor leader. He was involved in the IWW here in the United States when he lived here for about a decade, and then went back to Ireland and got involved in the Dublin General Strike in 1913 with James Larkin, and then eventually there was a part of, he was part of a rebellion in the 1916 Easter Rebellion in Ireland, and he was ultimately wounded very badly, and the British thought he was such a threat that they actually, while he was mortally wounded, within days after his capture, they tied him to a chair, carried him out into a prison yard, and murdered him, executed him. So that was, again, that was Rise Up. And I want to read a quick public service announcement here. The main movie at the Art Theater in downtown Champaign from Friday, August 17th through and including Thursday, October 23rd, is Kill the Messenger, a political thriller starring Oscar nominee Jeremy Renner. That film is about the journalist Gary Webb, who we talked about a little bit last week, who was documented in the film Shadows of Liberty a couple weeks ago at the Art, the one who broke the story in the San Jose Mercury about the CIA smuggling crack cocaine in the United States during the 1980s to fund the contra-terrorist guerrillas that the Reagan administration was supporting and trying to overthrow the government of Nicaragua at that time.
Paul had a little story about that this morning, and at one point they said that the cops had arrested some of the people on boats and had confiscated a bunch of money, and the CIA sent lawyers in to try and get the money back because they said it wasn't drug money. It was used for CIA purposes like that. They're just trying to get their own money back.
Yes, and I'm definitely going to go check that film out. Kill the Messenger at the Art Theater from October 17th to 23rd. So that started yesterday and it's continuing through the end of next week. Also, the Late Night Shocktober Film Festival this week at the Art Theater will highlight both Candyman and the original Exorcist. So do check the Art Theater's website for our alternating dates and times at arttheater.coop.
Candyman.
But the Art Theater is a patron employee-owned co-op theater. So
if you stand in front of the special mirror and you say Candyman three times, then he shows up.
Okay.
That's what happens.
I see.
Pretty scary.
Yeah. We're going to be having some interesting programs coming up the World Labor Hour, so definitely we'll keep you posted on email blasts and let you know here on the air. I'm just trying to think some off the top of my head. Later in November, after Ann Feeney's on, we're going to be having a guy named Mr. Toussaint who lives in part of the time in Champaign, but most of the time in Chicago, who's involved in the anti-eviction campaign up there. When people are being evicted from their homes or apartments, they actually go and obstruct the eviction process and try to assist them, even before then, of course, of being able to stay in their homes. We're also going to be having, last week you tuned in, we had some people from the GEO here, Graduate Employees Union, and one of those persons, Gus Wood, an African-American student in the African-American Studies program here in Urbana-Champaign, the U of I, originally from Atlanta. He's going to be coming back on the air and talking a little bit about black labor history. And there's going to be also, I believe the week after he's on, Professor Sundiata from the University of Illinois. It's going to be like a two-part series on black labor history that we're going to be having. Usually we kind of talk about that during Black History Month in February, but I guess you just got to grab the opportunities when they come along. And frankly, I think any day or month of the year is a good time to talk about history of any type, and it's amazing how much black history, African-American history, and labor history intertwined. There's a very symbiotic relationship between the two. They're so interconnected, it's hard to separate them at times, frankly. And we got some other good people lined up here as well. So, keep tuning in. And a few minutes here, we're going to be having our guests calling in from Detroit to talk about their campaign on the Fighting Workers Party. So in the meantime, we're going to take another quick music break here, and we'll be right back. So stay tuned. You listen to the World Labor Hour on listener-supported community radio station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
I was traveling through Illinois when I was invited to stop and sing at a memorial there in the little town of Mount Olive. Now, who of note in American history is buried in the cemetery in Mount Olive, Illinois? I'll give you a hint. It was a woman. It was the Union Miners Cemetery. Do you have it yet? Mary Harris Jones. Mother Jones. It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend.
Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Yes, David Johnson.
Yes, who am I speaking to?
This is Gary Walkowicz, and I'm here with Marianne Herring.
Okay, and you're calling from Detroit, Michigan area?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, welcome to the World Labor Hour. We're honored to have you on and stuff. And we gave a little intro to you earlier in the program that you guys were going to be calling in. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourselves and then sort of this you know, this election campaign that you're involved in.
Okay. First, I'll introduce myself. Again, my name is Gary Walkwich. I'm an auto worker here in the Detroit area, working for Ford Motor Company for many years. And I'm going to pass it over to Mary Ann, and I'm going to come back and tell you why we're running.
Okay.
Good afternoon, David. This is Mary Ann Herring.
Hi, Mary.
I'm running hello. I'm running for a school board position with the Dearborn Schools, which covers the K through 12 all the way through Henry Ford College.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why I'm running when after Gary speaks.
Okay, very good.
Hold on.
So, David, I'm a candidate for the U.S. Congress in 12th Congressional District. And I'm going to tell you a little bit why I'm running, to give you a little background to myself. As I said, I've been an auto worker at Ford Motor Company many years. I've been an elected union representative in the UAW for the last 18 years, but also very active within the UAW. I guess you would maybe call me an oppositionist to the leadership of the union and their policies.
Then you're a man after my heart. Did you happen to know Jerry Tucker?
Oh, yeah, very well, very well. It was a sad day when Jerry died a couple years ago. And, yes, I worked with Jerry in New Directions for a number of years, and so yes, very much admired Jerry. He was a great man within the UIW. I myself have, over the last decade, have been very active in the fight against concession within the UIW. I've led some of the fights to oppose the givebacks of the UIW to the auto companies. 2009, when we voted down the concession contract, I was a big part of that. And in the last two UAW conventions, which is in 2014 and 2010, I ran as a candidate against the administrative caucus. I ran for president. And I ran for president as a way to bring a voice of the working and the rank and file to that convention, where it's very rarely heard. And for similar reasons, I decided to run for Congress this year. I'm running on a slate with four other candidates, including Mary Ann. Because I think that the voice of the working class is not heard in elections anymore. It's been many years in this country since we had working class candidates speak for the working class. And I think there's a special need right now because what's happening to workers across this country, the working class really is in a crisis as far as we're concerned. We're paying the cost of the boss's economic crisis, and which has led to workers suffering a loss of jobs, to lower wages, people working for wages at second tier and minimum wage that they can't live on. It goes beyond the workplaces to working class neighborhoods, working class schools. The schools are getting worse and worse for working class children. Public services and working class neighborhoods are deteriorating. And yet we look around and see that all these problems are solvable. They don't have to happen because there's money in this society to pay and fix all the issues that we're facing as working class people.
Yeah, and you've been really getting hit hard up in Michigan, especially the Detroit area, what I call shock doctrine. I mean, my God, what's happening in Detroit, you know, with the water and situation and just this emergency powers imposed by the governor. I mean, it's like a dictatorship. I mean, a corporate dictatorship almost. Would you disagree with that? Okay.
No, I agree with you 100%. It is a corporate dictatorship, a political dictatorship against the interests of working people. And it's been a deliberate policies. What you see in Detroit here is the corporations, especially the auto companies, both cutting out jobs and cutting wages to put less income in the hands of working class people. And at the same time, the politicians have given tax breaks and subsidies to the corporations. So you had a great transfer of wealth from the working class to the rich in Detroit area. And I think Detroit is just the tip of the iceberg what's happening across this country. I think you're seeing the same thing, kind of things happen in other cities now. Detroit was just sort of led the way. And that's, again, one of the reasons we're running this campaign, to speak out against what's going on, but also say it doesn't have to be this way. If you look at the amount of wealth, not just in the Detroit area, but in across this country, where the corporate profits are at an all-time high, all the trillions that were given to the banks and the bailout, and the disparity of wealth between the rich and the rest of the population, which is growing to the extent it never has been before, I think you can say clearly that there's money there to solve the problems that we face as ordinary working class people.
Yeah, and indeed, I notice you have another worker running for the U.S. Congress. Is his name Sam Johnson?
Yes, Sam Johnson is a retired Chrysler worker. He's been a very much of an activist in Detroit and in the labor movement for his whole life. Sam is running in the 13th Congressional District, and then we also have two other candidates running, one for school board position in Dearborn, which is a suburb of Detroit, and then also for Wayne County Community College, where a lot of the young working class people end up going to community college trying to find a way out of their situation. But they also, because of the cost of the college and the lack of job prospects after they get out of college, are also having a very difficult time now. In fact, maybe I'm going to pass the phone to Marianne, and she'll talk a little bit more about what's happened to
you. Okay, just let you know.
Education.
Yeah, okay, I'm a retired union carpenter, and I was also involved in a national rank and file revolt back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So that's why I say you're a man after my heart. I know what you're going through, fighting your own union at the same time fighting the bosses and stuff. So it's just a real pleasure having you on the air. So let's talk to Marianne now.
Marianne's going to. Okay, here's Marianne.
Okay.
David, I'm back.
Okay, Marianne, so you're running for school board, and I just mentioned to Gary that I'm a retired union carpenter, but when the 2008 financial crisis hit, my wife and I fell in kind of some hard times, so I went to work in the public schools for a couple years. So I kind of have an affinity with you as well, knowing like public school issues. I mean, I don't know how much private charter schools have hit you guys up there, but I know we've been fighting them here in Illinois, especially in the Chicago area. So I just thought I'd throw that out there, and then if you had something to comment on that, you can, but in general, I want to hear why you're running and, some of the issues involved, what you've been facing up
there. This is a short program. You could
indeed.
listen to all the reasons why I'm running, but I've been a teacher for 40 years. I've taught on the college level, community college level, for all of that time, but I'm not just speaking for community college teachers. I'm running to give a voice for teachers, whether they're part-time, full-time, custodians, to food service workers, to all the other people who make the schools run, to parents, to students, because the attacks on public education have been so horrific that they've really impacted on the quality of education for the vast majority of children of this society, of course, who are from the working class. Gary talks about the attacks on the working class while we've been campaigning, including in districts that are very middle-class districts. The single biggest issue that has been raised during our campaign has been the attack on public education, including in quite privileged communities like Ann Arbor, Michigan. Custodians have been privatized. After-school programs have been cut. Parents have to literally be in a lottery to see if their child can be on a special on a sports team or an after-school activity.
Wow.
Extra fees have been added. I think the attacks on public education are part and parcel of the attacks that have resounded throughout the society, because it's public money that has been stolen, public money that should be going to public education or public services. I think Gary used the term the great transfer of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it's the great transfer of public monies from what should be going to public services into tax breaks, or, again, we talk about the bank bailouts in this campaign. The question of charter schools, Chicago's a biggie, but Detroit, the city of Detroit is a close second. And our state is infamous for the destruction of the public schools, or the money going to charter schools, when we absolutely know the quality of education is going down with this introduction, and it's giving, again, money to private interests.
Yes.
At the expense of ordinary families. I can keep going unless you ask me a question. I could also say this.
Yes.
No matter where people go to school, let's talk about the college level. We are told, young people today are told, people who've lost their jobs are told, if you get a different education, you can get a different career. Or if you go to college, your life will be better. Well, we know that this generation's future has been ripped up as far as access to decent paying jobs. We know that you can go into heavy debt in especially these schools, which are thousands and thousands of dollars a year, only to get out to become what we refer to as the sort of the indentured servitude population of this generation.
Mm-hmm.
Young people today, many of whom end up obviously underemployed or unemployed. And again, when we've been campaigning, I talked to a number of middle-aged people who will tell us how many of their grown children have returned home or have never left home, because even with a college education, they have they're not in a situation to pay rent or have transportation.
And I understand that college graduates currently are the highest demographic group of the unemployed currently.
That doesn't surprise me in the least.
Mm-hmm. Or at least underemployed. May have a master's degree and working part-time at Starbucks and McDonald's.
Yes, you can have a baccalaureate in a, being a barista. There have been way too many cynical cartoons on that question.
Yes. And so that leads me to the next question for both you and Gary, and I'll let you start to answer it, I guess, is why did you guys why didn't you guys run as a Democrat or a Republican? Why was it you decided to run independently, so to speak?
Because we didn't decide to run with either political party. Let me speak first.
Okay.
I have never had any illusions in the Republican Party. I gave up any illusions in the Democratic Party in 1968.
Wow. Okay.
And need I tell you why? Civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, naive me, believed that somehow that political party had a different policy, and I had a rude awakening when I came to understand that that whole war had been carried on Democratic Party administration after administration, not to mention when you watch the documentaries, for example, today, when people can watch documentaries like Freedom Summer and look at Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party, or look at what Lyndon Baines, hear what Lyndon Baines Johnson actually said, or Robert Kennedy actually said, no illusions.
Okay, but didn't we have hope and change in 2008? Hasn't Obama changed everything for the better? I'm throwing that as a sarcastic statement.
I never look at an individual. I look at the policy of a political party.
Sure. But you don't understand what I'm getting at is there was a lot of hype in 2008 that things had actually were going to change for the better, that this was a whole new Democratic Party, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess I'm just throwing that out as a sarcastic statement because it seems like a lot of people still have a lot of illusions in the Democratic Party. And Obama seems to be a very effective spokesperson for that party.
Well, it's not what we hear when we campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we don't talk to people who still have confidence in the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
But again, when we started campaigning, which is in May, I cannot tell you how many, really probably tens of thousands of people we've talked to from the east side of Detroit all the way to the west side of Ann Arbor, because our candidates' districts cover a pretty wide range.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who talk to us are talking about why they're fed up,
okay.
why they can't believe this is happening, despite the fact that they thought something was going to be different.
Okay, that's kind of why I asked the question, because I've seen in the past, how there's a lot of working people I know that, you know, when there's been, pretty good viable independent candidates running locally, either, Greens or even a couple times the Socialists, they would always say, God, I hate the Democratic Party. I really want to vote for so-and-so, but I just can't because I'm afraid the Republicans will get elected, kind of thing. So,
okay.
I mean, you're hearing a lot of that. And there's just also, I think, a lot of working people have just been in such a habit of voting for the Democrats for so long that they can't. But you're seeing something else now. See, that's what I'm seeing here. You're going door to door, and you're hearing people are starting to get fed up with the same old, same old.
Yes. Again, it's not. I can't. I gave you numbers,
mm-hmm.
I would say the people who stopped to talk, who didn't just sign, but who stopped to talk, have gone a step further.
Okay.
They're giving up the lesser of two evils. They've come to understand enough is enough, and on the one hand, I'll use the quote that I've been using quite a bit when I'm campaigning, quoting from the words of Eugene V. Debs. I would rather vote for what I want and not get it than to vote for what I don't want and get that.
Yes,
and I
indeed.
Would say if the people we've been talking to were familiar with Eugene V. Debs, they've said things to that with that same sense in talking to us.
Okay.
I'm going to pass it over to Gary.
Okay, yes,
want
please.
To pose a similar question.
Yes, indeed.
Hold on.
Hello, David.
Yes, Gary. So I'm sure you heard that conversation. It seems as if, I just posed sort of the devil's advocate argument and the reality that I've seen in the past is that, that a lot of people, a lot of working people still have some illusions in the Democratic Party, or if they don't, they've just been voting for the Democrats so long that they just in the habit of doing it, and also they're afraid of the worst alternative, Republican getting elected. And it seems as if Mary was saying when you guys have been going door to door out in the streets that you're encountering a lot of people that are getting fed up with that that phony choice, if you will.
Definitely, David. We hear that all the time. I think you can look around and see the statistics on elections and seeing that the turnouts in general are going downhill. And I think it's mostly those lower turnouts are in the working class neighborhoods because people have less illusions in the Democrats. And don't see a reason to vote. And that's one reason we decided to do this campaign because, I liken the Democrat, and you've been active, of course, in unions. And as you mentioned, I liken the Democratic Party to the union leadership we have now, not maybe what it was 50 years ago, but what we have today. We have union leaders who are basically see themselves as partners with the corporations. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been active fighting against in the UAW. And I think the Democratic Party is very similar to that. They're really partners with the corporations. They ask for workers' votes. They ask and they ask for us to support them by campaigning for them. I mean, for working people and unions. But yet, their policies are what? When it comes down to the sense of their policy, what's the real difference? You look around this country right now, whether you have states governed by Democrats, Democratic mayors and governors, or Republican mayors and governors, what's really the difference in the policies? And what in the time periods when you had a Democratic president, for example, and a Democratic Congress and Democratic Senate, what policies, what things have they enacted to really help working class people? If you look at those things, I think it's understandable why people have less and less illusions in the Democrats. I think it's for many years people only saw that as the only alternative to the Republicans, and that's why many workers voted for the Democratic Party.
Okay.
But I think their policy is becoming more clearly shown to be those policies, especially in a period of crisis right now, when the crisis is so severe for working people. What are they proposing? Because they're a real solution to the problem. There really is. There's money out there to solve these problems. It's got to be taken from those wealthy few who hoard it right now. But there's a lot of problems can be solved in this society. But as anybody who's in the Democratic Party proposing to do this, I don't see that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then. Win or lose, I mean, rather, some of you get elected, none of you get elected, all of you get elected. Are you still planning to continue and build on this over time?
Yes. Well, first of all, let me say this. We're also telling people when we're running that we don't think our situation as workers is going to be changed with the vote, no matter what the outcome of the election is, if we're elected or not elected, because it's going to take a fight of the working class to change things in this country. As you look in the past history, going back to the labor movement in the 30s and 40s and the 50s, look at the civil rights movement in the 60s and 70s, that's how things changed in this country. That's how you have real effective differences in how people have to live. And I think it's the same thing today. It's going to take a fight. And so while we're saying we're trying to bring these issues out there and tell people that there's not only that it's going to take a fight to change things, but when we fight, what do we fight for? We should fight for an end to unemployment because there's money there to provide everybody with a job and a decent standard of living. People don't have to work for second-tier wages, as you see in the auto industry and now across the country. Just calculate how much money it would take to, for example, in the auto industry, about 25% of the workforce now is working at second-tier wages. Just to pay them a first-tier wage, it would fall easily within the profits of what the corporations are currently making. If you look at what it would take to put people back to work in the cities and the state service workers, put teachers back to work in the schools, the money is there to do these things. It's not pie in the sky. It's going to take a fight to do that because the people with power and money are not going to be willing to give them that up But the solutions are there for people. It's just going to take a fight to do that. And that's the main point we're trying to get across in this campaign also.
Okay, very good. Well, listen, we've been sort of running out of time, but I would like to mention, I would like you guys and, you know, through you individually, you and Marianne or Rose, to send me updates on things that are happening because, you know, I feel like you guys up in Michigan are kind of like on the front lines of the class war at this point. And we'd love to, you know, get out any information, you know, on the show in the future that you'd like people around the country and even some listeners outside the United States to hear.
Okay, you know, David, you knew, I think you're aware, we do have a, there's a website.
Yes, that's going to be my next statement, yes. Uh-huh. And what is that website?
That website is www.workingclassfight.com.
Okay.
www.workingclassfight.com.
All right, well, Gary and Marianne, thank you so much for calling to the show, and good luck.
Okay, thank you, thank you, David.
Okay, take care. Okay,
Dave. That reminds me, we had some phone-in guests a while back from what was that, Lorain County in Ohio?
Yes, indeed.
Where they won, like the Workers' Party won like 12 of the 18 seats in the county board.
Actually, something. It was they won a significant. They won. I think they ran about 20 candidates and picked up at least a dozen or more. Yes, and yeah. They ran as Labor Party people. Yeah,
and a majority of the. Of the county board or what?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is not just an isolated instance in Michigan. It's happening throughout the country.
Indeed. Indeed.
Well, didn't the city of Champaign used to have an electrician for mayor?
Bill Bland, yes.
Uh-huh. Years ago.
Yeah, it was back in the late 60s, early 70s, yes. And what was interesting is he was the first working class person to ever get elected mayor of Champaign. And
was he the last? I don't know.
No, actually, what's his name? Dan McCollum was a school teacher, union school teacher. He was mayor of Champaign through the, I think it was the 1980s, late 80s. Anyway, mid to late 80s. And through
Jerry
the early
Swihart 90s. Was a police officer.
Yeah, that's true. Class. That's working class. You're yeah. right. It's just like...
he'd made it to management by then, hadn't he?
Yeah.
The police
yeah.
force.
Yeah. Okay. You know, good point, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick music break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supported Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois. Stay tuned.
Born in the flood, bloody finger paint sets, black marketed freshwater cannons, forget me not, epitaph, airbrushed with death. White tees, white beaters, button up, reattach flesh.
In between the lines, outside of the law,
outside of the law,
underneath the veil,
underneath the veil,
our foundation,
we navigate the
trying to find a pattern to break the mold,
to break
with the mold,
family to
go where we won't go,
where we won't go.
Screams that he's seen a monster. There's bloodstains on his shirt. They say that he's gone berserk. Sometimes when I wanna shut out this world, wanna rip up this page, wanna pour out this heart, wanna get up on this stage, and my lips become percussion, and my fists become the rage, and I pound on this table till it gives me something to say. Then I think about things that I've seen right in front of me that I don't wanna believe. Give me one of these mics, let me let them know the way that it is not how it's gonna be. Not that we don't let them get ahead of us, the present tension's no threat, it's just a fence across the path that we're already ready to walk rocks. Solid footsteps, let them put up obstacles and prove that it isn't possible. Fuck that, we don't give them any weight. True liberty, your freedom's at stake. Peace will never become passé. Live my life until my last day. It was 8:30 in the back cave when the cracks in the plaster collapsed and gave way to gaps in the pavement. Put it on blast for the passengers, but this is a disaster.
Lived in the little town of West Seattle on the other side of Puget Sound. Little tiny house, little bitty kitchen. He was a Norwegian immigrant, gave all of his life to the logging and to the union. He carried his red card in the union every working day of his life. We sat in that little kitchen and he told me the story of the Spokane Free Speech Fight, 1910. I would not attempt to duplicate that rumbling baritone voice or that Norwegian accent, but because of the story, the way he told it, he said, "Oh, they boomed into Spokane and towns all over the West, looking for work in the silver mines up in the Coeur d'Alene's or in the logging camps or in the wheat harvest, the 110 caps, the great wheatlands that flow away south of Spokane called the Palouse. Well, you jungle up in the flops, wait for the weather to break, and then you go down on the street on Trent Avenue, and there were these rows of little shops called labor sharks. Well, labor sharks hold jobs. You give a labor shark $4 and it entitled you to a job, say putting down a new mine shaft up in the Coeur d'Alene's. Well, you'd boom up there to that job, burning up your road stake as you went. You get up there, work a month, get paid, and then fired. Why? Because the foreman on the job was splitting the labor fees with the shark in town. So crooked as hell, they called it perpetual motion, where you had one job, one worker going to the job, one worker on the job, one worker coming back to buy another damn job. Well, he said that the union, the Wobblies, IWW, they came into those towns all over the West in Spokane and to build union hiring halls to control the conditions of their labor. Well, the one in Missoula, Montana was burned down. The one in Spokane was torn down by the law. So the Wobblies went down on the street and they put up soap boxes. And they get up on the soapbox and start windmilling, street speaking, exhorting. And they'd always set up right across.
Okay, that was a couple sets of music. One was from the Flowbots, and the second one here you just heard was from Utah Phillips and DeFranco.
Fellow worker
CD, and that was Direct Action. So anyway,
I think we had a correction of what we played earlier.
Yes, indeed,
Black 47.
Thank you, caller. That what the band that we played earlier, the song James Connolly, was not Rise Up. It was actually Black 47. Yeah. It was kind of hard to determine that on the way they had it kind of written on the CD cover and stuff. So
there's Utah Phillips does a funny one. I think he's speaking to some students and. He says, "Yes, you are our greatest resource, but look at how we use our resources." That's where I got that earlier.
Yeah, speaking of Utah Phillips, gosh, it was really a sad. He was going to be over in Bloomington and Springfield here a few years ago, right before he died. In fact, I talked to him on the phone actually, and it was quite a pleasure. God, I felt like it was just like listening to his CD where how he talks, monologues through the songs and stuff. Yeah. And it was really weird. "Hello, fellow worker," because he knew I was in the IWW. So
do a search of Radio for All, you could probably find an interview I did with him. I think only a couple of years before he died, maybe.
Okay. Yeah.
And he had just had some heart problems. Right before I talked to him, and please forgive me for the noise. It was a really crappy phone line running into my house for years.
Yeah, that was so sad because he right at the last minute, right before he was coming to Central Illinois to Bloomington, Springfield, he had some reoccurring heart problems and canceled. And then he passed away not too long ago after that. Unfortunately, it was interesting to talk to him because he said he used to come through Champaign-Urbana all the time back in the day when he was younger. He used to ride the rails, and he'd always some reason Tolono was the main destination he would always go to get off the train and then pick a ride to Champaign-Urbana. It was really interesting. Interesting conversation, but anyway.
Well, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you though. I remember the first time I ever heard a Utah Phillips song, and I think I can say that I remember. I was at this party. It was like a weekend long party, and we were getting just wasted constantly. And one morning, I was looking through the records and found this record and put it on and heard "Moose Turd Pie," which was a really funny song.
Yes. He's got a lot of great ones. Okay, we got another public service announcement here. There's a fashion show called Roz that's coming back out with their models on November 29th at the American Legion at 704 North Hickory, Champaign. They'll be serving food from 6 to 7 p.m. The fashion show will be from 7 to 9 p.m. And the DJ is DJ Nasty, along with dancing and food will continue after the fashion show. So that's November 29th, and that's at 704 North Hickory in Champaign at the American Legion. So anyway,
couple other PSAs.
I want to mention briefly that
the Disability Resource Expo is going on today. Started at 9 o'clock this morning, happened until 2 o'clock. It's out at the Fluid Events Center out on Country Fair Drive, and you can learn about local and state resources visiting 100 exhibitors, and you can visit the Disability Beat booth out there from